WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. Terry Gross is out today. I'm Barbara Bogave. This Sunday, the Emmy Awards will take place in Los Angeles and will air on CBS. The event, originally scheduled for September 16th, was canceled, but in response to calls by leaders to return to doing the things we usually do, the awards were rescheduled, albeit in a more scaled-back fashion, and with heightened security provided by the FBI, the LAPD, and the FAA. Before the original September air date, Terry spoke with Edie Falco, who's nominated for Best Actress in a Drama for her portrayal of Carmela Soprano on the HBO series The Sopranos. Falco won an Emmy for that role during the show's first season. She'd already had experience managing bad boys on HBO as corrections officer Diane Whitsley on the series Oz. In addition to her television work, she appeared in the hit Broadway show Sideman and the independent feature film Judy Berlin. Falco's Carmela Soprano tries to reconcile her two identities as a devout Catholic and a mob wife. Terry asked Edie Falco about how she approached Carmela's personal style and whether it was putting on the hair, the nails, or the gold necklaces that transformed her the most.
I would have to say it's the nails. There is something very, like, I couldn't be more different from Carmela in this respect in particular, that I'm always building something or painting something or chopping wood or some such nonsense. And you put those nails on and it becomes very clear what a different class or something of person that she is, how she is physically incapable of doing these things that I do regularly. You know, the heels and tight-fitting clothing and big hair and makeup where you can't really touch your face and jewelry that feels uncomfortable to me. But this is all very much a part of who she is. So it takes me a certain degree of time to get ready to shoot. And in that period of time, I definitely feel a transformation take place. But I don't know that it's anything, you know, miraculous about me. I truly believe that, you know, if my father was to put on the fingernails and the hair, that he would end up becoming Carmela after 2 hours as well.
When you met James Gandolfini, who plays your husband, Tony Soprano, had you seen him in anything else before?
Sure. He was one of those actors you always think, oh, good, he's in this. He's great. He scared the hell out of me when I found out that he was the guy playing my husband, because previous to that, I'd seen him beat a bunch of people up, and, you know, he'll kill me for saying this, but he played a lot of tough guys and a lot of mean guys, and, you know, they're like, yeah, this is the man you'll be going to bed with in this show. And I thought, well, that's interesting. So I was basically afraid, but he's the one who made the initial phone calls to introduce himself when he found out who was cast and that he wanted to have lunch so we could get to know each other. And I realized, okay, that's right, he's just an actor, that perhaps he's, you know, not the mean guy that I've seen in all these movies. And, you know, needless to say, that is very much the case, that he's a lovely guy.
How well have you gotten to know each other? Would you prefer to know him mostly as Tony Soprano, or have you really wanted to know James Gandolfini well?
That's the thing. And again, I don't do this on purpose, but it's something I notice about the way that I have sort of done this whole thing, is that I don't know Jim very well. We don't spend a lot of time together, certainly during hiatus or when we're not working. And it is not because I don't want to. The truth is, on some level, I look forward to the show ending. I mean, only on this level, because I am loving it. But so I can actually get to know Jim a little bit, because while we're working, I so much prefer to have him walk onto the set and have him be Tony, only Tony, you know, where I don't necessarily know how Jim spent the weekend or, you know, where he went to eat. And I mean, all stuff that I would normally love to know. But I think on some level, I fear it would get in the way of how pure my relationship is with him as Tony. You know, as I said, this is not something I planned, but it's something I think I've done in other jobs as well. I need to keep my personal relationship with these actors kind of clean and unencumbered, so that the pretend relationship starts to take on a much fuller life for me.
Did you ever have a personal relationship with an actor you were working with and find that it did interfere with your performance?
Let me think. Yes, I have. I will not mention names, but yes, this has happened, and it was extremely distracting. And I was furious about it at the time, at myself for having let it happen. Even just friendships, close friendships, start to absolutely get in the way, yes. It's funny. I don't know that I feel exactly the same way about not wanting to get to know the actors with anyone other than love relationships, you know? I think it's mostly with the men that I've had to be involved with on these various projects that I need to keep a distance from. Like with the kids, Robert and Jamie Lynn, I know them fairly well. You know, I know about their personal lives and their families, and I've met their parents, and that's, it doesn't seem to be quite as distracting.
Do you have any favorite Carmilla episodes of The Sopranos?
Gosh, you know, it might be in the first season with Father Phil, because the writing was so good, and which it always is, but I had a lot to do in that episode. And Father Phil is played by Paul Schulze, who is one of my oldest friends in the whole world. We went to college together. I've known him 20-something years. And when he was cast in this role, I was beside myself with excitement. And the fact that I got to spend all those days working with him, and we had this huge, he and I have done so much together, so many films and movies and television shows. At this point, it's almost silly. We played brother and sister and, you know, everything. And here we were on this television show that people were watching, working together, making each other laugh. And my grandmother is a devoutly religious woman, and she has watched everything I've done from forever, every TV show and movie. And I've done a lot of stuff with it. The language is terrible, and there's nudity and violence. And she sits there and she smiles. She's so proud of me. Apparently, the one time that she had to get up and leave the room was during the episode with Father Phil, where she thought we might kiss. So I finally, after all these years, I shocked my 84-year-old grandmother.
Why don't we hear that scene?
Of course, it wasn't just what Christ said. I mean, it was his deeds.
See, that's my question. I understand what he did, but a lot of what he said, I don't get. Like the sun rises on the just and the unjust alike. Why?
Because Christ was saying that we're all...
Well, that whores will go to heaven before a lot of the righteous?
Uh-huh.
Well, that's not right. Well, let's face it, Father, we got some major contradictions here.
It's about love. Think about it like that.
What does that mean?
It means hopefully someday we will learn to tolerate, accept, and forgive those that are different. Change through love.
Well, oh, man, I better get going.
Oh, where are you going? You just got here.
Oh, it's getting late.
Well, it's pouring rain out.
A scene from the first season of The Sopranos, featuring our guest Edie Falco as Carmela, Tony Soprano's wife. Falco is nominated for an Emmy for Best Actress in a Drama. We'll hear more of Terry's conversation with her after the break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back now to our interview with Emmy-nominated actress Edie Falco.
In a way, I figure you became an actress to get away from the kind of suburban life and neighborhood that you grew up in, and now you're famous for playing it, for embodying it.
It was funny that the first bunch of roles that I got professionally were playing waitresses, which is, of course, what I did for 15 years to support myself. It seemed like a cruel joke, but I don't know that I ever really wanted to leave my suburban upbringing. I mean, you wanted to move to the big city as a young kid, and knowing that's where you have to go to be an actress and all that. But I guess it is sort of funny that I ended up kind of back in that environment. But I was never in any huge rush to leave it. And particularly now, you know, whatever, 15 years after I graduated from college, all I think about is wanting to get a house in the suburbs again, how lovely it is out there and how the city's wearing me down. So,
how many years did you waitress before you were able to make a living as an actress?
Oh, on and off for, I guess, 20 years probably. From, you know, my first waitressing job to my last probably covered a span of 20 years.
What kind of restaurants?
Oh, every kind. West 4th Street Saloon, which is now gone, which is sort of heartbreaking, which was sort of a, you know, saloon bar place on West 4th Street. And then formerly Joe's, which is no longer formerly Joe's. It's I don't remember. It's a Chinese restaurant now, I think. Birakino on 29th Street, Canyon Road on 77th Street, all different kinds of food, all different kinds of restaurants, and I was so unhappy. You know, the jobs varied in difficulty and in income and clientele and all that kind of stuff, but I was so unhappy and just got more so as the years went by. It was the only way I knew to make a living and still have time available to go to auditions and classes and all that stuff. But I was just miserably unhappy. And I was sure that it would never end. I remember going to Sunday brunches, you know, to set up the restaurant and think, this is my life now. From the rest of my life, this is what I'll be doing. And I still have moments where I wake up and realize that I don't have to set up a restaurant on a Sunday morning. I will still walk past a restaurant with a sign that's saying, you know, help wanted, and think, oh, that's a pretty busy lunch crowd. I should check in there, you know. I wonder if that will ever completely go away. I can't say for sure that it will.
What was the worst part of waitressing?
Occasionally, I would be recognized for some small film that I had done or a theater performance, and for some reason it upset me tremendously. I preferred to kind of put on my waitress face, you know, my sort of, you know, worker face while I was doing this stuff. I'll bring you your drinks and I'll bring you your food and I'll tell you the specials if I'm in a good mood. And I don't want to be recognized as a human even. I sort of felt like if I'm an actress, that's what I want to be doing. I want to be walking down the street getting my coffee when someone recognizes me, as if when I'm acting, that's what I do and that's all I do. Or I don't know. I'm having to discover this as I'm talking about it as to why it would affect me the way it did. But that is definitely the way it affected me. I hated it. And I occasionally even denied it, that I was the person they thought I was.
Hmm. Do you think you learned anything about people by waiting on them? Things you could draw on for performances?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There were certain stereotypes of people. Depending on the area in which I waitressed or the time of day, it was frightening how predictable sometimes it would be. I mean, there was a certain echelon of individual who I despised. God, getting into this, I should probably shut up at this point, but where they would never make eye contact with you. Mm-hmm. They would come in and you'd, can I get you something? Can I get you a drink? And they would not so much as glance in your direction. They would, they'd ask you a question. They'd be still looking at the person they're with or, like, pointing to something on the menu, and they would not so much as look up. I became evil towards the end of this whole thing, so I don't know how much was them and how much was me. But there was all kinds of fantastic behavior to take on while, or to learn from as I wandered through these various jobs.
Do you tip well now?
Oh, God, I do. I'm a little over the top, but you know, there are worse things. You know, you live literally dollar to dollar when you're waitressing. And I remember times when I was working, I would work from, the shift was from 4 to 4, if you can believe this, 4 p.m. to 4 a.m. was one of the first jobs that I had. And I remember having to go home with $24 after that many hours. And I would have to spend $10 taking a cab home because I lived up by Columbia University at the time. And the restaurant was way downtown. So, you know, 12 hours of my life for $12 or whatever. So outrageous. But years and years were spent like that. And to know that a person is not expecting more than whatever it is, 16% or something, and to give them a nice big tip, you know what? It used to make my day. So it's the very least I can do. It's an interesting thing when dating that me and female friends have talked about. The first really big thing you learn about the guy you're dating is how he treats waiters and waitresses at a restaurant and what a huge effect that will have on the rest of the relationship or its longevity, you know. It's a big thing for me. These people are doing a job, you know, and for the most part, as far as I'm concerned, an unpleasant one, and the least you can do is be polite.
Well, Edie Falco, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
It was my pleasure.
And congratulations on your Emmy nomination.
Thank you very much.
Actress Edie Falco. She's up for an Emmy for her role as Carmela on the HBO series The Sopranos. The Emmys air this Sunday on CBS.